And welcome to the Under the Bus podcast. I'm Clayton, joined by Merge. How are you doing, Merge?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm happy to talk about a basketball team that I've actually watched a few games from. But I'm doing great.
Great. We're also joined by the menace known as Nas. Nas, how are you doing?
I'm laughing right now at this Russ Presser. He said that I love to have fun when playing basketball.
Yeah, he does like to have fun. Win, lose, or draw, let's just make sure we're having fun.
Okay.
And then we are blessed by the presence of Mr. Big Swole,
Roger.
How are you doing, bro?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk basketball, and I just want to put a precaution out there. Any of Nas's comments here are not views represented by me or anyone I work with. So I just like to put that, preface out there before we go forward on Under the Bus.
Me? Man, I'm in a fault. Okay, let's go.
Harsh, but totally fair.
Mm-hmm.
So, as everyone should know, that you can find Raj now doing his stuff with At Watch Playback for the All Access Lakers, killing it over there. Raj is great. Raj is optimistic, and our buddy Steve sent a clip of a previous podcast where I said that I love optimistic Raj. It's fantastic. And Raj, it's true. You can be optimistic with a shitty team, and it's wonderful. But now we can all be optimistic because this team is not so shitty. It is fun to watch. It's a team that I honestly think is going to go on a big run. We for those that listened to last episode, we broke down all the trades that happened at the deadline. I want Raj's perspective on this because Raj is good at breaking down basketball. Better than, we'll say, 99.99999% of NBA Twitter. So, yeah, I'm going to let Raj, I'm going to let you start off by what move do you think was the biggest? Or, you know what? No, I'm sorry. Let's go with what was your favorite move? It doesn't have to be, the big one that everyone's going to point to, but if it is, then go ahead.
Yeah, so I think my favorite part, first, I was remembering we did a podcast, I think like a year ago, and I came talking roses about Wayne Ellington. And then I think you guys were trying to, pull me a little bit down on my horses in there. Yeah. Wayne Ellington, just to be fair, had like an awesome like 3-game stretch with us where like he hit this game tying 3-pointer in overtime against Dallas and really had me going. But I think at least Malik Beasley matches the volume there. But I think my favorite part of this, I think you guys are starting to watch games again, which is really great. So now we can kind of go back and forth with it. But I love like the Beasley Russell as like a pairing. And I feel like I'm watching like modern basketball again. I'm watching like teams have to defend our guards, like as shooters, like have to actually go over the top on screens. And I think it like really opens up all kinds of stuff. I think we've been watching like really rudimentary offense. And I think that was big because of our lineups. Like if you watch the plays now, they're a lot more advanced. There's a lot more variables on every single play. There's a lot more options. So that's what I'm excited. And then learning about Vanderbilt as well. Like I think I'm getting to know him as a player, as like a high motor type of wing defender. But Beasley and like D'Lo as a pairing to me, I think D'Lo is getting the biggest kind of name because he's just the $25 to $30 million player. But I love them as a combination. We were starting Beverly and like Dennis Schroeder every night. And like going from that to Beasley and Russell, just in terms of not just spacing, but volume of shots they take. It's just watching a different team. It feels like we just flipped, and we did, but we just flipped the roster with like 23 games left. So I'm excited here to talk about it.
I'm just so excited about the roster now. I outright hated watching the Lakers. Everyone that is in the DM knows that I would watch and hate watch just essentially just to make myself angry a lot of the times. But now in the little bit that I've gotten to watch, I haven't got, because have they played 2 or 3 games together? I know it's at least 2. Is it 3?
3 since the Russ trade. They've played only one, Bamba, and then LeBron in the lineup as well.
Okay. So I didn't get to watch the Golden State one, unfortunately. That is sadly the fun one.
I got a week to watch it. No.
The reason why I'm saying is I had downloaded it and then accidentally deleted it. So that was why I was hitting you up in the DMs, Raj, about it.
Okay. Yeah. I can send it to you if you need it, but
I will need that. I will need that. The Portland game, that they were all there for that one, weren't they? It was just like
it was the
game right before, right?
Yeah. Before Bamba and LeBron came, yeah.
Gotcha. So that one
second
was
night bit, of back to back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a bit disappointing. But I mean, they did also shoot otherworldly. There was some bad defense, in my opinion, from what I watched. But the Pelicans game, that was fun. There's just so much really to talk about. And we've talked about it a lot already on the previous podcast about like potentials. Like these guys were all amped up. Like Mo Bamba like had 3 fouls in like 3 minutes. It was hysterical. Mm-hmm. He was just so amped up and ready to go. LeBron and AD both look revitalized. It's great to see. Merge, you want to talk about your boy Vando with Raj for a little bit?
Oh man, Jared Vanderbilt. Where to start? Yeah, he's a ton of fun. I mean the biggest thing I think is just from those three games is his defense on Ingram. And I know Ingram still played pretty well, yeah, but it was a lot better than Patrick Beverly ever would have done on Brandon Ingram. And you don't have to force AD or LeBron on him when he's going off or whatever. Vanderbilt and a little bit of Troy Brown as well, who I thought did a solid job on him too. They played really well. And I mean, Ingram is a guy who makes some really tough shots, like some of the toughest shots in the league. He made some insane ones just from his length alone. And he was able to really hold Ingram at bay. And I think Ingram still had like 25, something like that points, but he really had to work for it. And I think that's the biggest thing for me, especially if we want to make any sort of noise in the playoffs. You need a defender like Jared Vanderbilt. So he was a guy that I've been a huge fan of since he was in Kentucky. Clayton knows I really, really liked him. He's just kind of this high motor, high energy guy who can also, you know, dribble the ball a little bit, and he can pass out of a short roll, or he can make that extra pass. He keeps the ball moving, which is just not what someone like a Wenyan Gabriel, who I think has been good this year, he just doesn't have that ability as a playmaker. And Vanderbilt's a guy who you can see a lot of plays down the line where he is alley-ooping it to AD for a big and big, or, you know, Austin Reeves is like cutting baseline, and D'Angelo Russell, who's also a great cutter, he can hit him for those. So you have really four guys, and you don't want Beasley handling the ball too much, but you have four guys now on the court who can make a play at any moment. With Vanderbilt, it's more so with his passing ability, but that's four dudes who can really make a play, and I think that's what really made that lineup specifically work really well against the Pelicans.
Yeah. Somebody from the Pels organization, within the organization, said that Vando is the one that gives B.I. the most problems defensively. Look, B.I. still got his numbers. He's always going to get them. Like, great players will always get their numbers regardless, right? But he had to work for each and every one of those points. Like, it wasn't like Pat Bev where he just shot over him, right? Pat Bev is like an aggressive defender, but you can't have him like checking wings. It's just like he could only check guards. If you put him in against like a big wing like B.I., he's gonna get cooked. You have somebody like with Vando, like who has like a, yeah, I'm pretty sure he has an over 7 foot wingspan, right? I'm pretty sure about that, right?
Yes. 7'1".
Yeah.
7'1".
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you can match up with like wingspans. And athleticism too. He's like really athletic too. Like B.I. is actually, he's athletic, but he's not like, he's more smooth than he is like athletic, right? These are the kind of defenders that you guys are going to need for the playoffs if you get that far. Because right now the NBA is a wings league, and how long have we been begging for like somebody like this on the Lakers for a while? It's been I can't remember the last wing defender that we really had. So like what, Kobe and like maybe Lamar?
Artest,
yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Ariza last year. No, but your point, the guy who said that actually was on Antonio Daniels, who's the color commentator, who said like, yeah, he defends BI best. I love though Vanderbilt. Number one, he's young. He's 23 years old, so he's not like on the end of his career. Mm-hmm. He's a more defensive oriented guy, but his defense is like super detailed. I like talked to his had an interview with his trainer like last week. And he talked about like they work on his like abductor and like being able to switch and move his feet while also like being able to go through different hands and stuff on defense. And you can see the like level of detail he takes into it. He can like get skinny on screens and he can defend like 1-5, which I think is just we haven't had before. So it's cool watching a guy like that when like again the stark contrast from what we were doing. Like we were putting like Lonnie Walker at 3. You know what I mean? Like that's what we were starting a lot of the games, and now it's Lonnie like Vanderbilt.
The situation with Lonnie makes me sad.
Yeah, me too.
As a huge Lonnie fan, like he was at one point like a clear like
third best player,
and he wasn't a bad third player either, you know. And now, because of the knee issue and everything, like he might not be getting minutes. For me,
as a cynic, you might keep him. Like he might have.
No. I think that's where I was going to get to. Yeah, you might actually be able to keep him now because you know, with less playing time, the knee issue. He doesn't have early bird or anything like that. But he can get a pay bump up to 125%, which I believe is something like $7.25 million.
Seven and a half.
So like. That's a decent pay raise, especially for a dude who's taken a bit of a step back, just you know, from the knee and whatnot. So that he was helping carry the team there for a while. So I hope he returns to form. You know, I still think there's a lot more there. And I hope the Lakers keep him, but I do understand the numbers game. Nas, real quick, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, a couple of things. Do we have another? We get another MLE next year, right?
I believe so.
MLE, I believe, yeah.
Right, so we could keep Lonnie with the contract that he has, like just give him a little bit of a pay bump and then get somebody else with the MLE, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Is it the MLE or is it the taxpayer's MLE?
So I think, what did we pay Lonnie last? We paid him the taxpayer's MLE, right?
Taxpayer. But
yeah, I think we have the MLE next year. I think that's how it works.
Well, I mean, right? my point is that, like, there's still an avenue to keep him, and yeah, you know, like it depends on what we do with Malik Beasley too. Like, you know, if we end up like keeping him or signing him, like picking up his team option and then trading him, there's different ways that you can go about this, right? But another thing is, like, you know, but we at least we have the option of keeping him if that's the case, because his value, because before, like in the first 2 months of the season, he probably outplayed his contract. Like now it's like, okay, if you keep him at this level, then it's probably, he's probably being overpaid, but it's okay because he has the potential for it. That's one thing. Another thing also is that with Jared Vanderbilt, we're just talking about defense here. We haven't seen him like actually with like an offensive trainer, like Phil Handy. And from all accounts, Vando's a very hard worker. Like, and he's not stubborn like other people who Phil wanted to train and refuse to be trained, right? So I want to see him with the full summer under Phil Handy, right? Because I'm obviously LeBron's going to vouch for Phil Handy because, I mean, that's his dude. So we'll see what happens, man. I'm excited to see Vando in a with an actual full off season and with a training camp under his belt too.
Also, he is Clutch Sports, so.
Yeah, he's Clutch.
Would you start all three of those together? Beasley, Vando, would you start them together? You could like see their chemistry already kind of being instilled in. It's Vando also, I love Merge. You can talk more because you've been a fan for him a long time, but he's like never in one place. So like he's a, like they teach you like you pass and you screen away, but a lot of players don't really do that. But he's like, he does that every time. Like when he passes it, he'll always go screen for somebody. And him and Beasley, if you watch like their highlights, it's a lot of them are together because he'll like, he'll go and set up Beasley a lot of times, but would you guys continue to like start them together as like a I guess just getting some type of chemistry on a team that has none, I guess, anymore from what they've traded.
Yeah.
Plus what's D'Lo, the option, though?
D'Lo and those two played in Minnesota as well for 2 years, so right. They just have a chemistry three. Already.
Those three.
Right.
Yeah. And to your point about Vando, he does a lot that I see is when they sag off him, he makes sure to go into that space and use that space to his advantage to cut or to do something to make an advantage for the team. And that's like kind of the opposite of what someone like Russell Westbrook would do, because he would just sit there and essentially be 5-on-4. While you should still sag off Vanderbilt if you're another team, he's just making use of that space, and he's able to offensive rebound a lot, which is what he's really good at. I think that's probably his best skill. He's an incredible offensive rebounder. So I totally agree with that when it comes to him just being constantly active, even when there's no one on him.
As for the starting, I've loved Malik Beasley even when he was at Florida State, and I hate Florida State as a Miami fan. But I've liked him for a long time. I think he's probably best as a six man. That said, because obviously they're trying to make a push. I think it was AD who said, you know, they're gonna make it to a six seed or something like that. Or that's the goal.
And that's the goal. The same thing today as well.
They said
this recently today, like both of them.
Ham for sure said that today. I know Ham for sure did.
Yeah, because AD or someone else has said it.
It was Dennis. He said that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Like, you're right. It was Dennis.
They have to go like win 15 to 18 games.
Yeah.
And then
shout out to Dennis. Shout out to Dennis though of saying, "Let me come off the bench." That was unselfishness right there that we had not seen from a point guard. Let's back to the starting thing.
Without complaining, by the way, without complaining.
Yeah, because he was the one that brought it up.
Yeah, because we had point guards that went to the bench and you know big injuries and stuff. And
yeah,
this guy was like, no, like everybody has to sacrifice if we want to get to this common goal.
Yep,
and that includes people who aren't playing. That's what he said.
Yeah, I would if this was like to start off the year, I would have Malik come off the bench. But because you want more chemistry, you need that cohesion. I think you kind of have to. I had originally had said like, you know, Lonnie, you know, just I don't believe he should have been like Wally Pipped or anything like that. You know, lose your starting spot due to injury. But like, I get it. It could be, in my opinion, it possibly should be Austin.
Me too.
That's
I would do that too.
Yeah. So
and Austin's a guy who gets quick chemistry with people. I realized even in the first game, him and Vanderbilt had some really good chemistry.
Yeah. So for sake of chemistry, Malik makes sense. Next year, mm-hmm. I think that's where I look to kind of push. then yeah, those three with LeBron and AD. Ruby's coming off the bench now, I believe, as well, which I think is good for him. He's gonna feast like that. I have to say really quick before we continue talking about the actual guys, the way that they were able to flip the roster, not just of like they were able to move essentially like half the roster, it felt like. They were able to get younger and better mm-hmm. with really the only asset truly that they gave up were they gave up 4 seconds and then that 2027 1-4 protected.
And they,
other than that,
they got 3 seconds back.
No, for sure. No, for sure. I was getting to that. They didn't, but my point is like they didn't give up jack shit for this. You know, Tony or
you didn't give up one unprotected first. I mean, sorry, one protected first, top four protected to Utah. That's all you really gave up.
No, I know. Like, remember when everyone was saying, you got to give up both picks to get
Buddy
Hield and Miles Turner? No, you don't. No, you don't. Tony Jones from Utah was trying to say, you know, you're going to need both of those picks to even get them to talk.
Literally, this time last year, like people were like saying, "Hey, you know, like let's do whatever it takes to get rid of Russ. Give up that first and Russ for John Wall." Like,
yeah, who is also traded and then cut again. Like, it's just like this is why I said you can't just panic move through things. Like, that gets you only in more fucked up positions. If you would have done that, I don't think Buddy Hield and Miles Turner get you anywhere that you're really wanting. Because I've said before, I didn't want AD with another big.
That's my next question.
A lot of minutes.
That's my next question, y'all. Well, the cost here is this, though. This is my only pushback to that. I've expressed the same sentiments, but the cost was the opportunity cost, right? You're whatever you are right now, like the opportunity cost this year. So waiting until the deadline with 23 games left, you're 6 games under 500. You have to play probably 55 win basketball to get into the playoffs. Like, that's the cost, right? If that's where you saved your first round pick. How much worse, or is this worse than the Indiana package to you guys? Or is this better than the Indiana package?
It's better. It's way better.
Way better.
Miles Turner was an unrestricted free agent. He signed an extension with Indiana. And I understand you would have extended him. I don't want to extend Miles Turner. Don't get me wrong. Miles Turner is a good defender. He's a good shooter. Like, he's like,
he's having a career year.
He's also a dude who plays about the same amount of games as AD, and everyone wants to complain about AD being out all the time. Miles Turner is out a lot. It's just not noticed as much because he's in Indiana. Buddy Hield can't defend shit. He can shoot great, but he can't defend anything. With this, you added two shooters in D'Lo and Malik Beasley, and
who are both top 15
defenders then also you got an elite defender in Jared Vanderbilt. I don't care what anyone's stats say. That dude is a great defender. He was just not being used right in Utah, who was trying to use him essentially as a small ball five. That is not what Jared Vanderbilt is. He is essentially kind of like a 4-3. Like Rui, where he's a 4-3, except he's more athletic. He's he's more functionally athletic. Rui's pretty athletic, but I just don't think he's as fluid as Jared is. So he doesn't have obviously the offensive repertoire or whatever you want to say that Rui has, but you have both of them now. So it really doesn't matter. And in the case of, you know, Miles Turner, you got Mo Bamba, who is a really good rim protector and he's also shooting like 42% from three. That's good. You got him for Patrick Beverley, who should have never been a Laker in the first place, and a second round pick. Then that is an upgrade on top of Thomas Bryant, who was playing really good offensively. I've always loved Thomas Bryant, but when you're going to complain about playing time when AT gets back, that's questionable. Bye bye.
And then get traded to the Nuggets. It's by less minutes.
Yeah,
like soon to be a three-time MVP.
Yeah, right, okay. Want to fuck around? Gonna find out, I guess. So it's just like that. That's you upgraded on a lot of these moves with giving up less. Is it now like, oh fuck, we got to win right now? Yeah. That said, you would have a 31-year-old Buddy Hield next year, who I've never really been a fan of. You can listen back to the old like backdoor cut days. Never really been a fan of him. And again, I like Miles, but like I don't want to pay him $30 million or whatever he signed that extension for. He's
like 27 and a half, I think.
Yeah, like I don't want to pay him to be another big. AD is showing he's really good at this. You just have to put the right pieces around him and not make him carry just a literal like wheelbarrow of shit around, you know, when his other good players around him for a stretch was Lonnie and Austin. That was literally it. We were so happy. Like when JTA came back from injury and then we're like, oh, well, he's not really that good. And Troy Brown Jr. like who's been really good. I have to give it to him. I was not the most excited with that signing. Even though like it was a minimum, I've never been a huge Troy Brown fan. He's still good. He's still been playing well. He's like, and it being at 6'6", he's a few inches taller than Lonnie. And while I think it's negligible just because of wingspan and everything, it makes some sense. He's playing really well, you know? So like you upgraded the roster entirely, right? With that move, maybe you would have been able to do Kendrick Nunn for Rui. But then at that point, everyone's like, oh shit, they just overpaid. Let's see what else we can get. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you might have gotten a few games, but like, I don't think Buddy Hield and Miles Turner are doing anything for you to put you in that upper echelon where everyone thought they were. So
especially when they're very likely going to have to do it themselves. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Real quick, Nas. And also, when they do make the playoffs, and I'm calling it now, they will make the playoffs. In my opinion, they do get to at least that sixth seed. They are built better. Oh, they are built better. I know, I'm optimistic, right? It's rare for me. They are built better than that trade would have gotten you. Mm-hmm. Miles Turner, don't really trust him in the playoffs. Also, like, I don't want to run two bigs in the playoffs. You now have Rui Hachimura, who is good in the mid-range, valuable in the playoffs. D'Lo, deadly from mid-range, really good in the playoffs. Like, and he's shown, like, he can be really good in the playoffs on his own as well, like, with Minnesota. Like, you have Jared Vanderbilt, now a big defensive wing who can defend some of these guys. Like, you're not going to have to rely on AD and LeBron, and everyone just be like, just throw them at him. If you do that, and they have to then also have the intense offensive load, they break down. Now you don't have to worry about that. Takes less pressure off of them, and just let them be, you know, the superstars that they are. So, Nas.
Yeah, and another thing that people like tend to forget about, like, oh, how come we didn't take the Indy deal? First of all, we don't even know if Miles Turner was ever in the market, because Herb Vyman is old. He doesn't care about rebuilding.
Yeah.
Because he's like to get a die soon. Right. Oh, like, I mean, I'm not saying that, like, I'm hoping that. I'm just saying that, like, you know, he doesn't have time for a rebuild. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Like, so he doesn't care about that. And it shows the proof is in the pudding. Like, he got an extension, right? And the thing is, it's like with centers, you don't want, unless they're like generational, like Anthony Davis, or like maybe
Jokic, Embiid.
Jokic. You don't want to pay them. They're like running backs. They're like running backs in the NFL. Like, you don't want to pay these guys a grip load of money, because it's a positional value. The positional value is very low. You could definitely plug and play. Like, that's why we need minutes eaters. Like, you could get before, like, we would ask for like somebody who's like, who would take the minimum, like, you know, like Hassan Whiteside, like, or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, anybody who's just willing to take minutes, like, you know, like Damian Jones was picked up on a minimum in large part because we just needed guys who just would take minutes at that spot.
He actually got a little bit more than the minimum. He got 2.3, mm-hmm. which is a little bit more.
But you know what I'm saying? You get the sentiment. Yeah. So like, it's, that deal was never necessarily on the table for the Lakers. The other thing also is that if you take that deal, like what you were alluding to, is like, you don't have a wing defender. You're not ready for the, you're not as prepared for the playoffs. You're just, you'd have
to force AD to defend a KD.
This is a wing league. Yeah. People need to realize it. It is a wing league. You now have multiple guys that are considered wings.
And the other thing also,
some really good ones at that.
And the other thing also is that, like, when we were talking about like positions, like who would rather start, like Lonnie, Bees, or AR. Right now, for continuity purposes, you're picking Bees, right? And not only that too, but like Bees a little bit stronger than Lonnie is, so he could play kind of like guard better in terms of not getting backed down by people in his position, right? So that's one thing that you could use in the playoffs. Like, it's necessary, actually, that you need that. The other thing also is that Bamba is like, he has a $10 million non-guaranteed contract, right, for next year.
Option, team option.
Yeah,
Sorry, real quick. These deals give you so much more salary. This is something that we talked about with you, Raj, before. Yeah. The salary slots are just like, it's wonderful. I'm sorry, Naj. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. This is the case. You needed all that stuff to like, not only to help you out for the now, but for the later on too. And these salary slots are exactly what all of us need. Like, we're asking the Lakers to get. Like, you can't do something with like $47 million, but you could do something with like $10 million here, $18 million there, and like whatever D'Lo gets. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not assuming that D'Lo's going to be around, but you know, just in case something like. We'll just say maybe Gary Trent Jr. becomes available, right? Maybe you could trade Bamba and Bees for Gary Trent Jr. I think you can take that. You know what I mean? Like, it just depends. It just gives you a lot of flexibility. It's just and it doesn't close. I'm not saying that you actually go through those options, but it does give you options instead of you being stuck with like some guy who's like who has a $47 million slot and then you're done. That's it. Like, there's nothing else you can do with that. Yeah.
The Lakers went from having potentially something like $30 million in cap space to now they are able to trade how much of that, of the money that they have. D'Lo can sign a 2-year 67?
67 and a half. Yeah,
67 and a half. Yeah. So, and honestly, like, would that be a bit of an overpay? Possibly. But, like... Should any of us be really upset if they were to sign him to that? No, because then that could be packaged to move again. All right, Nas has got to leave. Nas, real quick, did you want to add anything before you got to dip?
No, man, I'm just excited for the rest of the season, like Raj and optimistic Clay. You know, bro, like the moment that those deals happen, I was like, yeah, the Lakers would be all right, you know. And so shout out to Jesse and Joey, and yeah, I'm like really happy, man. They saved my life, man. They saved my sports life because I'm a Raiders and Dodgers fan too. And it's just, no. All right. So
hey, at least the Dodgers should be good. No.
They'll be interesting.
At least they're in the playoff.
They'll be interesting. Yeah. They'll be interesting. I'm a big Thor fan. So we'll see how it goes. All right. All right, fellas. All right. It was good talking to you guys. We'll talk to you guys soon. Later.
All right. Bye.
So
I was looking. Hold on, real quick. I was looking up at the standings real fast. Say Lakers are the 6th seed. You want to know the two closest teams are to that 3 seed is the Kings and the Clippers. Give me the Clippers in a 7 game. I don't care. It's Kawhi and PG. I want to see the chaos. I want to see the chaos.
So, yeah, I think while I totally understand, like, while people just like you lose the opportunity cost of potentially saving your season and whatnot, they started 2-10. That dug such a hole that honestly, like, making a move like that doesn't bring them to, like, you know, bring them out of it, in my opinion. You possibly lose the opportunity to then trade for Rui, which then also puts you in a weird spot of like you like, you're not going to be able to play Rui, AD, LeBron, and Miles together.
Yeah.
You know, like, you could probably, I mean, LeBron can play point guard, so he can, like, you can do anything with that, but like, you can only play two of those three at the same time, and Miles is going to have to play a lot, you know, with getting Mo Bamba. You wouldn't have been able to do that. Who is cheaper, younger?
And he doesn't have to play every game, too. There's games where I can see Wenyan going in over him for sure.
Mm-hmm. So I do understand that aspect of it. But with that 2-10 start, unless you were going to say you should have done it in the offseason, but then, like, I don't know. I was never a big proponent of it. I know a lot
it would have been more. It would have been more expensive still.
Yeah, and you still would have had this huge disparity in height. It was either you're big or you're a tiny ass guard. And Buddy Hield's only 6'3". Yeah, he's got a long wingspan. He might be 6'4", I guess. But like,
who knows?
Yeah, you lose flexibility, in my opinion. You get I don't know if I think Miles Turner and Buddy Hield are better players than what you got, and you got more players. You know, like, You added size. You added valuable wing defense. Like, I just,
yeah, especially if you add Rui into this equation as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you would have asked Rui to essentially be your Jared Vanderbilt. No fucking way is he able to do that. I like Rui. I was skeptical of the move because, like, of the overdraft. But, like, if you take that out of the account, like, he's a solid player. I still, honestly, if I'm the Lakers, I still pay him.
Yeah, but 15 mil probably.
Yeah, I would pay him. I would keep him. I would keep D'Lo. Then you have so many salary slots that if you do want to make a move, you can, you know. And yeah,
this is a move for next year. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a move for next season. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With
the potential of being something this year as well. Like, this is next year move, but with the potential to help this year a lot more. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
You're certainly in a better position to make the playoffs and make a run right now than you were 2 weeks ago.
And then the last thing on Turner, to me, that was AD insurance, right? That's what that move was. It was Anthony Davis insurance. And AD, even after we went 2-for-10, AD missed another 30 games. So who knows if Turner, Buddy Hield would have kept you alive in that opportunity. But I think, like, we traded for a team that's now deep with depth. You talked about Lonnie Walker. I don't know where he gets his minutes from. Like, we have Austin Reeves as well, who also has to play right. Malik Beasley.
It would have to be Troy, but Troy's been good. You know,
the Lakers literally at this point have people that were starters for the Lakers who were solid. Yeah. Like, they were fine. Like, Dennis is now, you know, said, put me on the bench. Like, he's solid. You know, like, I understand he has his faults, but, like, if people want to act like he's dog shit, they're fucking crazy. Like,
he's a perfect backup point guard.
He's arguably the best one in the league. Yeah. And, like, him coming off the bench, who was a starter for the Lakers, you know, 2 years ago, and he was part of the reason why the Lakers even made it to the playoffs during that season. He's been good. Who knows? Like, obviously, I could see, like, Malik and Austin and Lonnie and, I mean, Troy rotating. Who knows? Just between all of that. But, I mean, those were three guys that I said who, you know, in Austin, Lonnie, and Troy, who are now on the bench, and they were starting and good for you, you know? Like, maybe you weren't winning you games, but that was just because, like, LeBron and AD were out, and they started 2-10, you know? So, like, you have a better bench with that Buddy Hield and Miles Turner deal.
Yeah,
you improve those two, but then you literally have no one. And that's still with that bench. That didn't even mention Rui or in, like, Mo Bamba. So, like, you now could go, like, 12 deep. You can rotate to allow guys to sit, you know? Like, Austin, you don't have to worry now about, like, oh, shit, his hamstring is jacked up. He needs to sit for – how long was he out? Like, 6 weeks? Like,
he was on for a while.
Yeah, so, I mean, like – so, like, now you could just be like, all right, yeah, no, like, go ahead and rest. You'll get your, you know, your minutes when you're healthy. But, like, now we don't have
to push you. It also is a little, like, Caruso and Vanderbilt-y in terms of, like, they might be better in, like, 20 minute, like playing for 20 minutes, and they would be, and, like, they can close games, but, like, have it be 20 to 23 minutes, and it makes a lot of sense, especially when you have the depth in guards. And you have a Rui who can play just as many minutes as Vando as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think the team could stand for, like, one more wing defender. Like, say, like, Mo Harkless is out there. I don't know if he's done. He's, like, 30 at this point, you know. But, like, that's a guy that, like, Nas has brought up. And, like, Laker fans have, like, drooled over for years just because of, like, his defense. I think he's kind of cooked at this point. But, you know, like...
Yeah.
That idea, like, you could have him, like, spot minutes, you know, in the playoffs if need be, just because of, like, his pedigree and everything. But, like,
now I'd love to see Max Christie as well. I like Max Christie. I'd love him to play as well.
Well, and see, this is, oh, man, this was such a good season for him because he was forced to play, and he looked good. And now
he wasn't Clay. He was better than the people that he was like. No. Playing. He wasn't just Forrest. He was better than the guys. Like,
yeah.
That
he was. No, for sure.
Behind.
He was forced to play because that was not the intent.
Yeah.
With him to begin with, but like, yeah, no, he turned out to be at in some games like the second or third best player. Like he was just good as a 19-year-old. Like. Looked really good. So like he got the valuable experience of playing in the NBA, and now he's going to be able to go to the G League because obviously they're pulling him up and down so he can practice with both squads and whatnot. Yeah. And get as much run as possible. I'm getting honestly tired of all the notifications of that. But
he's better than JTA, like, now, like, already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christie is also like next year insurance as well. Trade a Beasley and be fine about it. You can let, I don't want Reeves to go, but you can let Austin Reeves trade him or he let him walk and be fine with it in terms of depth and guys you have.
I'm not fine with that. I'm not fine with letting Austin.
I don't want Austin Reeves to go, but I'm saying like Beasley, Schroeder, Christie, and Lonnie Walker. That's a fine guard rotation in my opinion.
Yeah. If Max continues to develop how he was showing, yeah, you're okay losing one of those guys. You know, like, would it hurt? Yeah, I don't want to lose Austin Reeves. Like, I didn't want to lose, you know, Alex Caruso. But, like, it makes it more palatable, especially with, like, the Lakers have a first this year and a second.
It's going to be a mid first as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be mid first. Like, and they do so good with undrafted guys already. So, like, The roster is good, so like they could do some stuff like that, and then you know use Malik Beasley and Mo Bamba in a deal, you know, like Nas said. No, I'm not advocating for anything like that, but it just gives you the option to do something like that. The flexibility is just insane with Malik. Jared's only at $4 million, and I'm not dealing him. In fact, we were talking on the before the podcast. I would look to extend him as soon as possible. Who's the Lakers shooting coach? Is it Gent?
Christian.
Right. Mm-hmm. If because he's shown that he can, you know, work some magic with some of the guys so far this year, in my opinion. If he's able to get Jared Vanderbilt to like 38% from the corner, you're looking at. I want to say, was it our buddy Daniel Bishop in the chat who said like he's a Jeremy Grant light? And I'm like, that's how Jeremy Grant started.
That was Rui. He was talking about.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, like that's exactly how Jeremy Grant started. Like ridiculously good defender, could hit some corner threes, and then boom, offensive development. Like, and now like Jeremy Grant turned down like a $30 million plus year extension, like because he's going to get a max next year. Like it's going to be stupid. Can you like that's just insane. So like that's what I'm saying. Like
4 years, 150 or some stupid number.
Oh yeah, it's going to be insane. And like I like Jeremy Grant. I would not pay Jeremy Grant that much money. You know. So like if you could do something like Jared, be like, hey yo, like 4 years. 40, you know, like the Kuzma deal.
Yeah.
Three and 42, 45, something like that. I'm so down for something like that. And then again, that just continues to give you more salary flexibility. Mm-hmm. So that's not even what I'm calling for, you know, but it's just the options now are just so much better than they were 2.5 weeks ago, whatever it was.
Well, like, remember what I was complaining about when I came on the pod last time was like, we just keep doing these minimum dudes, right? We just keep like going through vet minimums.
It's been a thing. Sorry, real quick. It's been a thing that we've talked about with the Lakers back to before LeBron signed of these 1 year deals. And I'm like, you need to build a team. You don't build a team with 1 year things. So no, I totally agree. Continue.
No, what I was saying was how many now are vet mins really that you're in your rotation, right? I mean, it's really just Troy Brown, like, is the vet min player. Winning Gabriel maybe when he gets in, but all these other dudes are like 10 million type of players now. And Vando even, we both agree, is kind of underpaid, right, for what he is. So all these dudes are like now non, you know, minimum type contract deals. And I think that matters. Like you go through your rotation, you only have a few guys that are minimum deals. So I think that's huge with team building as well. You saw like Dallas be able to make the Kyrie deal because they have minimum contracts like Dinwiddie, like DFS. But I agree. I think they should bring all these guys back. I'm fascinated in Mo Bamba. That's the guy I know least about because he hasn't played as much. And I think even in Orlando, he kind of fell out of favor a little bit.
They but have so many bigs.
Yeah, they're loaded with bigs.
It's ridiculous.
But like, so people compared him to like Thomas Bryant as a shooter, right? But they're nowhere near in the same tier as like just straight volume. So Thomas Bryant per 36 takes about 2.5 threes per 36 minutes. So that's almost nothing for like a shooter type big. Mo Bamba shoots like 12 threes per 36 minutes. That's just a different.
He shot five in that first game that he played.
Yeah. No, and he shoots really well from three. He's done it ever since he was at Texas. There was a reason why he was fifth overall pick.
Right. So that's a different tier of like just different archetype of players. I'm fascinated because like we've been obviously Miles Turner, one of the things that people gravitate toward him is like his 3-point percentage, right? Like his 3-point percentage is pretty high. But per 36, threes aren't as big. He takes wide open threes, right? So he's not really, he's not taking like half contested or a little bit open threes. They're mostly wide open. Mo Bamba just shoots. If he's picking, popping, he's firing.
Well, he can also shoot over literally everyone with that pterodactyl wingspan. So yeah.
So him and actually Beasley also. So I was working on Malik Beasley the other day, and like his 3-point attempt is also around 12. So those two at like that volume is just a different archetype than we've seen. Like we haven't even had that. Now I was trying to think the last like player that shoots like Malik Beasley does is like Ben Malcolmore that we had, like that shoots at that type of volume that he does. Yeah. Wayne Ellington.
There it is. No, you're good. You're good. So we're silent, so we have a good break. So then Merge can patch it. You were talking about volume of three, so whenever you're ready to
start about just the volume of threes that like Mo Bamba takes, I guess, in conjunction with what Malik Beasley does. It's just a different team. And I was like wondering, I was asking, I think before it cut out, like what do you guys know anything about Mo Bamba, or like were you watching him? I don't know what college he went to, but like what type of Texas. Okay. I was listening to like
major prospect coming into the draft. He was like a guy who was being heavily considered as the number one pick in that draft for a minute until he fell off of Texas.
Yeah.
Well, they said he got hurt, right? So I guess he was playing in Orlando and like they were supposed to be developing bigs, but then the coach came in, was like wanted to win or whatever. And then he got hurt. And I think he never really recovered back to like where it was supposed to be, but I'm fascinated. We traded our starting shooting guard for Mo Bamba. Like, if you just think about it and conceptually, like, we traded our starting shooting guard for Mo Bamba. So I'm interested how he looks, I guess, in the rotation. But what do you guys think of Mo Bamba?
No, I've been a fan of Mo Bamba for a while. Orlando was a bad spot for him. Like you said, they were trying to develop. They had, I think, Vucevic when they drafted him. And then Vucevic did not want to mentor him at all. And then after that, they drafted Franz Wagner, then Paolo Banchero this year. Like it's just big after big after big. They also had I feel like they also had like Keem Birch there for a minute as well.
They have
Mo Wagner now. They just had so many bigs, and like they even play some of their wings like Chuma as like a big as well. So like it's as like a four, even though he's only like 6'6". So it's just the style wasn't really conducive to him. Whether also be like Marco Fultz got hurt, Cole Anthony then got hurt. Like it was,
and they're also like not shooters as well. Same with Suggs, they're just not good shooters of the ball.
Then drafting Jalen Suggs, who it's been sadly a bit of a disappointment. I was really high on him, but it wasn't a good system for him. I was honestly surprised that they re-signed him, because I remember last year we were like, oh, that is a guy I want to take a flyer on. Like even last year at the deadline, I believe we said like I would happily trade for Mo Bamba, just because of like the size and the ability to spread the floor. Now, like, he's not going to be able to really post guys up. That's not really his game, unfortunately. But he can shoot, and he can shoot well from deep. So like he's essentially a 3-and-D big, you know, like he's like Brook Lopez type, you know, of where Brook now just shoots from deep all the time and is solid in the interior. And Mo Bamba is really good at protecting the rim because he's also like 7'2 with a 7'9 wingspan. So like, and a standing reach is just, it's damn near 10 feet. So like, it's just ridiculous. I loved that deal. I hated the minute that the Lakers traded for Pat Bev. Not even because they traded our boy THT away, who is starting to come along, it sounds like, recently, after they made some of their moves as well. I hate Pat Bev. I know people said, like, once he's on your team, you start to love him. No, fuck that dude.
He's not good anymore, too.
He's just not. He's a pesky defender, but he's not a good defender. That's the thing. And
he's also not a starter anymore. He's 100%
definitely. He's like your eight man at this point, you know. The Lakers were having to start him. So the fact that they were able to move Bev for Bamba is a huge upgrade, in my opinion. One, you add shooting, and I will give credit to Pat Bev after he started shooting so pathetic at the beginning of the year. I think it was like 17% from three, like in the first like 15 games. He brought it up to, I think it's about 34%, which means that he had to go on a bit of a tear. So all you know, his flowers to him. But like that move, you now have, you know, because of the other moves you made, you didn't need Pat Bev because now you have bigger guards, bigger wings and everything. But now you also were able to upgrade on Thomas Bryant, who was a good offensive player, but like now you have a good offensive player and a really good defensive player. So like AD and Mo Bamba could play some minutes together, like people wanted him and Miles Turner to do, but like that's not necessarily what I would want to do. But like, he's a guy who could play 20, 25, 30 minutes if you need him to, you know, and be able to put up points. So and defend the basket and shoot from deep. Like it was a perfect fit. That was like my sneaky favorite move. Like I love D'Lo, I love Vanderbilt, but like of just like a holy shit, they just kind of did that, you know?
So I was a big fan of the deal too, and I've been a big fan of Bamba since college. Just to play a little bit of devil's advocate, because I do think he's a big upgrade from TV. You don't really want him on the floor against physical bigs, because he's not the strongest guy in the world. He's a guy that I think you might want to use more, kind of if you can use him as a help defender at the rim. I am really interested to see how he would look like against AD or with AD, or even with like a Wenyan and Gabriel. But I think I don't know how much I love him and Rui next to each other just defensively. Rui's been solid defensively, but more of as a wing against wing defenders, or against like other wings. So he's the guy. It's why I mentioned before, like there are games I can see where Bamba just doesn't play and a Wenyan and Gabriel gets those 15 minutes or whatever. But that's not really an indictment on Bamba. I think for his skill set, it's nice to have a guy who was a willing shooter who can put him up pretty quickly in terms of just attempts, and a guy who we saw in that Pelicans game, he had a nasty block on Ingram, who again is a guy that you don't just block Brandon Ingram.
No.
It just doesn't happen. So he's 100% going to be a valuable guy, more of a 10 to 15 minute guy, because obviously you want AD in there.
Oh, yeah, no, I was more meaning like he could if like, say, AD needed to sit out a game or something like that, which I'm hoping that in these last, what is there, 23 games left, right?
23, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I pray to God that LeBron and AD are able to make it the rest of the way. My whole thing is with my prediction of them making the playoffs is – they need to be both playing, and they both need to put forth the effort, because there were a lot of games this year where you could just see them mailing the check in, you know. I don't think they do that now. I think they're happier. And I think we'll see them put forth the effort, like when AD was on his essentially like MVP route that he was on for a while.
Something also, that was huge in that Pelicans game, LeBron didn't turn it up until the fourth quarter, at least in my opinion. It didn't seem like, it wasn't like he wasn't trying, but he was a lot more passive and he was a lot more like floor general because he could. Yeah. I think that's a huge thing that if you can get more of those games during the regular season, just to let LeBron rest as much as possible in game, because all three, including D'Angelo, played 30 minutes or less in that Pelicans game. So I think that'll be a huge thing. If you're able to get that against these teams who are like the Pelicans, like the Blazers, like the Timberwolves, teams like that. If you can, and we have a few games against those three teams. We might be done with the Pelicans actually, but either way, a couple of those like 8 to 12 teams, we play a decent amount of them coming up. So if you can get wins like that against teams like that, I think it'll help out a ton.
And we only have one back-to-back left, I think. So LeBron's only missed like 8 games this year, which is pretty low for like a superstar level. You'll see teams all around the league. Stars have missed a ton more, but he usually sits like back-to-backs. And I think we have one more back-to-back left. So an AD.
That's to crazy to me that he only missed 8. I feel like he's missed way more than 8 somehow.
No, he's barely missed. I think he was out for a little, like a 2-week stretch when AD went bonkers. Like I think AD was averaging like 35 a game or something like that. But since then, he's been pretty healthy. And then he sits like the back-to-back games mostly. But no, he's been healthy. And I think AD needs to play every single night going forward. But to your point, Merge, about like LeBron coasting, dude, it's so refreshing to watch like D'Lo run offense versus like what we were watching. Like watching D'Lo run screen rolls or pick and rolls versus like, and we love Dennis Schroeder. Clay, you just, you know, went on a nice Dennis Schroeder kind of backing, but D'Lo's like a legit like grown up point guard, you know, like a legit starting point guard. And you watch that from like what Westbrook was doing, or even Dennis Schroeder, we'd have Patrick Beverley bring the ball up the floor, and you know, all that type of stuff was just psychotic. And then you watch like D'Lo run just a real legit offense. It's just, I think we have a chance. 6 seed, man. If we get the 6 seed, I might get like my first tattoo or something. I don't know if we'll get. I'd be happy
Lakers,
with like.
Lakers have 3 back to backs, by the way. Just I looked.
Oh, they do.
I'm trying to make sure. Yeah, their last game is April 9th. They've got 3 back to backs. This upcoming Tuesday, the 28th. And then Wednesday, March 1st. And then they've got
Tuesday. Really close together.
I didn't see that.
Tuesday, the 14th, and then the 15th. And then there's one more where it is the April 4th and April 5th. But gotcha. looking at the schedule, you know, Golden State, disappointing. Dallas, good. But, like, I think Luka and Kyrie are still trying to figure it out. Memphis is, I don't know what happened to Memphis. They talked some shit and then they went downhill. OKC.
The Lakers have beat them twice this year too, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So like there's the schedule, while isn't easy, I don't think it's backbreaking either.
We play a lot of the teams that are ahead of us. So that's,
yeah. That's the gift. Get you in better positioning. So if you look at the standings, I'm pulling them up right now, which is great, you know, talking points. The Lakers from the 6th seed are 3.5 back. Yeah, you know, yeah, they have to jump, but they have to jump a ton of teams. Don't get me wrong, but like, it's not like the West is a juggernaut right now. They added a lot at the deadline for sure, but like. The Nuggets are 41-18. That's good. But like we 18 losses already. That's like
a lot. Yeah, you don't see 55 win teams, you know? being one seeds anymore, you know? Like you just don't see that happen that often.
Yeah, like man, they would I guess they could end 62-18 if they were to win their next 21 games. But like, that's not happening. So, like, yeah, the West isn't a juggernaut. Like, and the teams ahead of them, Portland, who
they play the Kings tomorrow. There,
yeah, they just went bonkers. The Jazz falling apart. Thunder. I mean, I love Shea, but like it's still, you know, a year too early for them. The Warriors, who knows what's going on with them, and if Steph is healthy.
Steph is getting reevaluated in 1 week. I think Woj tweeted that out today.
Gotcha. Pelicans, we just beat Timberwolves. Are a mess.
They're a mess.
Like they're just outright a mess. So then, like, to get to the sixth seed, you would essentially have to make sure that you beat like the Mavericks, the Suns, Clippers, Kings. Because I don't know if Grizzlies or Nuggets fall from their 1-2 spots. The Queens are something else this year. I will say that. But KD is
playing this weekend, it sounds like. So they could jump up the standings, the Suns, purely off of KD dominance. That could be a team you could see in the first round.
They just don't have a bench, though. Like,
no, they're not deep at all.
He was just hurt. Booker's been hurt a lot. CP3 has been hurt a lot. They just gave away their best 3-and-D guy. It's Kevin Durant and you know and all that, but like you got to make the playoffs, and if some of those guys are out quite a bit before then, you know, like I'm not saying like they're not going to make the playoffs or anything like that, but like they're pretty shallow. Like Landry Shamet is going to have to play. And he's not good.
Terrence Ross is going to have to play.
Oh, he went. I didn't realize he went to the Suns.
Yeah,
I missed where he had gone. Like Terrence Ross is fine, you know. But like that was like one of the guys I was talking about the Lakers of getting, you know, that. But he would essentially just be a spot in front of like Reed, who we haven't even talked about.
He made a three. He made a three in that Pelicans game.
Yeah, for your 13-14 man, like could do a lot worse, you know. So can play.
Luckily, the Lakers play the Warriors twice in the next like 7 games, and I'd be pretty surprised if Steph is back for both either of those games. He'll be back for tomorrow, obviously, but March 5th, that's maybe. But even if he's really evaluated and he's fine, I don't think they would play him immediately. I think he'd still be like a game time decision for a couple of games or whatever. So, and then what, you play Memphis twice, you play the Mavericks twice, pretty soon coming up here. And then New Orleans again, Houston is bad. The Knicks are pretty good, but I think they're beatable. All these games are winnable. But there's no like one team where I'm looking at here and I'm like, yeah, there's probably going to be a loss in like a normal game that isn't like a back to back, or how the Lakers play weird in one specific place for whatever reason, like Orlando or something like that. Like, there's not anything like that. So there's a lot of games. They're all winnable, in my opinion. They're not going to win all of them. That would be pretty insane if they won 23 in a row or 24 in a row, technically. But there's a route here for like 18-5. I really believe that, honestly. There's a route there for that.
I called 21-3 for the final 24 games. That is some optimistic shit for me. Like
Roger's like, whoa, calm down, man.
I know.
I might pass out. I go 21-3, I might just pass out on live. Like 21-3.
After how they played, it would be insane. But like at the same time, like how you said, all these games are winnable. There's not a game on there. Like, and I think they'll probably lose. Like, I think they play Phoenix twice, and they play, as you said, the Mavericks twice. And I think they play the Grizzlies twice. I think I could see them being like losing one of those three, but then like I don't see them losing to Chicago, despite what Pat Bev just said about wanting to knock the Lakers out of the playoffs. Like, dog, you fucking suck. like, I don't know.
The Lakers are only 5 like games out of the 4 seed. They're only 5 games out of the 4 seed. That's insane.
I gotta look that up again. Like, seriously, Five games out of the four seed?
The Clippers are 9 back from the Nuggets. The Lakers are 14 back from the Nuggets.
Holy fuck, you're right. That would be absolutely insane. That would just be completely and utterly bonkers.
And only, I mean, and then the Kings are only a game ahead of the Clippers, by the way.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine NBA Twitter blowing up like that? They would come for Danny Ainge's head on a pike. Like they're gonna go on their tiki torch parade going after Danny Ainge because of I'm sorry. No, I'm not actually. Fuck Danny Ainge. Despite giving us a really good deal for once. But like oh man, they could have like rest of the league if it goes how I think or think it's possible. Man, they fucked up. They fucked up. So I'm optimistic. I love it. It's weird for me. I don't know how I feel about it.
I love it. But doesn't it feel good, Clay, to be on this side? Like, doesn't it feel good to be on this side? Like,
it's like enjoying. I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah, it's like an outer body experience. No, really quick emerge on the Warriors. Both those games actually are at home. The Warriors are just a terrible road team, by the way. So
they are. They're a horrible road team. Absolute
awful road team. But you know, going 21-3, that'd be great. To me, I'm just glad like we have a team. I think that like can build for next season. You know, like I've really freaking missed that. Like we weren't built like Malik Monk. We weren't gonna afford last year. Carmelo Anthony was not probably an NBA player. Cam Bazemore is not an NBA player. Who else did I watch?
Go back to that roster from last year. I'll pull it up. How many dudes on that team were
Dwight
Trevor are Reza, no longer in the league? You know, Dwight like Howard, they're just straight up no longer there.
Taiwan, but Dwight Howard.
Yeah, he's a Taiwanese all-star. Taiwanese all-star.
Melo gone, Trevor Ariza gone, DJ Augustine, who I totally forgot about, gone, Bazemore gone, Bradley gone, Chaundy Brown Jr. Oh man, I forgot he played a little bit. Collison,
I like Chaundy Brown.
Gone, yeah, me too. Demboya, like, holy crap,
I forgot about Dejku.
Yeah, Wayne Ellington, nowhere to be found. Winion Gabriel still here. Taylor Horton Tucker, still in Utah, obviously. Dwight Howard, gone. Jay Huff, still completely tearing it up in the G League. No idea why.
Your buddy, Jay Huff.
Yeah.
He can't defend in the bigs, but yeah.
I don't know. I think he could do, like, he blocks a ton of shots. I think he could do something okay. I'm not saying he would be a starter or even like your backup big, but like as a third string, I think it'd be fine.
Maybe.
Stanley has been traded and cut now. I wish like he could be back in LA.
I don't understand that rule. It doesn't make sense.
It's bullshit. Yeah, it's bullshit. Like he was traded and then cut or traded and cut. Like he should be available. I don't like that. Jamario Jones. I forgot they had brought him back. Yeah. Mason Jones, no longer there. DeAndre Jordan, is he in Denver?
He's playing in Denver. Yeah.
Oh my God. Mac McClung was on the roster last year and just other than the dunk contest, hasn't done it. You know, he's a G League player. Malik.
Oh, he has like a million followers on Instagram now all of a sudden.
I know. It's awesome. Shout out Mac McClung. Austin is here, obviously. Rondo out of the league. Isaiah Thomas again out of the league.
They legitimately played gone. A Rondo, Isaiah Thomas, Russell Westbrook lineup at one point.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that was real.
Rondo, Thomas, I'm not gonna count McClung because he was a two-way essentially along with Demboya. Jones, I think was also on a two-way, but whatever. So I think that's he was four, a 5. Yeah, you might be right. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Like 14 of those guys that were on the roster. Damn, there was a lot of players that played last year. Are not in the NBA anymore. Like
And McClung technically isn't in the NBA, but yeah.
No, like he was a 2A type thing. No, he's on their G League team.
They signed to a 2A though, didn't they?
Yeah, which
Sixers
yeah,
I mean, did. It's,
it's essentially like he's playing in the G League, so right. You know, like he's not on technically like a true roster spot. I mean, like he can be pulled up if need be, but you know, like that's a ton of dudes that are no longer in the NBA, and they played for the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you remember, Raj, do you remember last year when people were like, just wait until Trevor Ariza gets here?
Like, man, that was not set up by me. That was said by Frank Vogel. That was a
No. I'm not calling you out. I'm just, do you remember how many people?
That was like, a moniker that people said. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, like, hey, wait like, for Ariza to come like, back.
What happened to Kent Bazemore the year before? He was really good in Golden State and then turned pumpkin in LA. Like the roster was so bad last year, and people wonder why they were so bad.
He's back in Golden State, right? Is he not on roster?
No. He's not on the roster.
Jesus Christ.
Isn't he on Sacramento? Oh, he got cut by Sacramento, so he's not in the league. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just amazing, like the turn of events from last year to this year, then to after the trade deadline. Like we said, you literally have a roster that could go 12 deep if need be, you know, like you don't want to, obviously you want to have like 9 guys mainly in the rotation, but like, if you had to, you know, like someone sprains an ankle and you know, someone has a cold and has to miss out, you know, like it's, you have the guys, like I said, Reed is essentially your 13th man, because I'm going to count Max as like, because how he goes back and forth. Yeah. Like he's going to dress out, but like, he's not going to play. But like, if you needed him to play 5 minutes, I'd be fine playing him 5 minutes. You know, how many, you couldn't say that about apparently 14 members of the Lakers last year, you know, like just insane. So yeah, I'm happy. I have not been this happy about a Lakers team, I think, since they won the title in the bubble.
Yeah.
Oh. Which is just
so forever ago.
I know. It literally feels, fuck, man. That was 3 years ago. Was it 3 years? And is it technically 4 seasons now? Because they like rushed back after that. Too, yeah. They?
4 seasons, 3 years.
So, man, this is the 4th season since that title team. That's insane, man. That's insane, because it was Milwaukee and then
the Warriors.
The
Warriors, and then there was another
one more
team there.
One more team won.
I keep coming back to like how crazy the last, you know.
Yeah, so it was Lakers, Bucks, ago. Warriors. Those are your last three.
Okay,
this was season four. Oh, no, okay. This is 3.
No, this is the 3rd season. It feels like 4, though, I will say. Yeah. It's been a long time.
Years off my basketball
life. Oh, my word, yes. Yes, he did. I remember, I've told Alan about this, when he had Pincus. Shout out to Pincus. Some working, some backdoor stuff, I'm just saying. When him and Alan talked about Russell Westbrook during the off season, I was so fucking pissed because I was like, that is not the move to make. And then they were like, you know, it could make some sense, you know, just trying to kind of talk themselves into it. And I was like, no, you cannot talk yourself into Russell Westbrook, and the Clippers are going to find out. It makes me happy. They're going to explode. Yeah. I can't wait. which some of the moves that they made during the deadline, I don't understand. You literally trade away your
Bones
best.
Bones is going to play.
Bones is going to play, but he's also not a playing maker. He should play.
No. He should. I don't know. It depends on how many minutes Russ gets.
Oh,
he's
God,
playing.
Right.
You don't bring in – like, I've heard this sentiment that, like –
Oh, no, Russ, yeah, Russ is going to play. It's going to be hysterical.
He's going to start.
But they're like, yeah, if he doesn't play well, you can just bench him. Have you watched Russell Westbrook the last 2 years? They not paid any attention. Like, Russ is going to play, and whether the Clippers win or not is going to be highly dependent on how Russ plays. Like, there's no world where that's not true. So
he's playing 25 plus minutes.
Absolutely. And I like Eric Gordon. I like Eric Gordon. I like getting Eric Gordon
in a vacuum. Yes, but
for their team,
for Luke Kennard, fuck no.
Luke Kennard had the best shooter in Clippers history.
Yeah, it's literally their best shooter. Like
Eric. I think he had injury issues, but yeah.
Gordon is back down to shooting like 37% from three. He's not an elite shooter like people think. He had a good
He shoots like 10 a game.
He does.
So 37% out of 10.
But also because literally he had no one to fucking tell him anything in Houston. Who was going to tell him anything? Kevin Porter Jr.? Like, get out of here.
On your point about Bones, they also have Norm Powell and Terrence Mann. Bones isn't
Who's better than Russ? Both are better than Russ. Norm Powell.
Both are better than Russ.
Yeah.
I've always been a big fan of Terrence.
Bones will play. Bones will play.
Oh, wait. Are we getting three-guard lineups?
Yeah. I can't wait.
Three-guard lineups.
And Russ Westbrook is going to set screens, according to Ohm.
He's going to be Draymond Green for the Clippers, guys.
I just don't get it for them. I think Terrence Mann and Zoo are their third and fourth most important players. I think Zoo and Terrence Mann are like huge key to what they do. And now they just throw Russ or Westbrook in there to run point guard. These press conference quotes don't make it sound like Russ is about to be the 14th man. Like that's not what it sounds like. So
Marcus Morris is going to have to be your small ball five when Russ is on the court. Like that's like the only way you can optimize Russ. You have to have Morris at the five. And it also comes back down to
Zach Lowe said though, he can't do anything without the ball in his hands. And you're like Paul George and Kawhi are going to need the ball in their hands 60 to 70% of the time because they're by far your best players. It's not even close. So like,
are they gonna go stand in the corner? Like, are PG and Kawhi just going to go stand in the corner?
I think PG would be a little more likely, willing, but Kawhi, hell no. Kawhi will demand the ball.
Yeah, he's like, give me the freaking post up. I'm freaking touching it every time, so
yeah,
I don't get it.
For Kawhi Leonard.
The copium of Clipper fans right now has been hilarious. It truly has been.
It's yeah, and so many are like, I don't want to call it a failure right away. It kind of looks like it's going to be a failure. And like, yeah, man. Yeah. Y'all made some very questionable decisions at the deadline and bringing in Russ. They also got
Mason Plumlee as well, right?
Yeah. That's fine. That's okay. I'm surprised they traded for him when supposedly he was going to be bought out, but I guess at least they get him right away.
Reggie Jackson, it's weird. Very weird. Trip.
Yeah. Which is funny. They got rid of Reggie Jackson because they were tired of low basketball IQ players, and then they brought in Russell Westbrook.
They waived John Wall.
They traded John Wall to the Rockets.
Same thing. I mean, he's going to be waived in Houston. He's not playing there. They had John Wall. I'm not sure Russ is better than John Wall. Like, I'm not sure if that's
Do you remember when people wanted to trade Russ in a first for John Wall?
And two firsts. No. It was two firsts.
Was it two firsts? Oh, my God.
It was two.
That made no sense.
Funny times.
Yep. It's almost like people should stop rushing to make bad deals. Just because you can get on the trade machine doesn't mean that you should get on the trade machine.
No, it is not.
I love trade machine. I sent I don't know how many ridiculous ones. But some of them
remember the Doug McDermott, Josh Richardson, Jakob Poeltl one.
Oh my God. Shout out to Masai Ujiri who went
a fair Jakob Poeltl been really good for Raptors since he's gotten there.
The three games. Sure, like Jakob is a starting big. Someone said he was like a top five big, and I had to laugh at that though.
No,
like he's good, but he's not a top five big.
For the money, I'd rather have Zubats over Poeltl.
Oh my god, yeah.
Without a doubt.
100%. All right. Raj, did you want to add, did you want to finish on anything? Did you have any final topics before we continue ranting and everything?
Yeah, one last thing. I want you guys' thoughts. I don't think we've spoken since we've gotten Rui either. And Rui gets kind of lost in the sauce, right? Because I think he was like the new shiny like person for like 2 weeks. And then they brought in D'Angelo Russell. But I'm because I went to the game that where his like it was his first game against the Spurs, and that lineup is like massive. Him, LeBron with AD. So I'm interested, like Rui as like the sixth, seventh man, where you can just like, hey Rui, go isolate on the mid post. Like I love that. What do you guys like his defense? You talked about I think earlier, Clay, where like his like lateral quickness isn't there, which is expected for a guy who's like 250. Only guys like that are like LeBron and like I don't know who anyone else who's that big and that lateral, but I'm fascinated to see where he Vando, AD, Braun with like whoever you want at guard. Like I'm fascinated in that. What do you guys think of Rui like fitting into to all this?
I don't know about that lineup personally.
Oh, not that just a, together.
Just an example.
Just
rotating.
No, I had said earlier. I at first was hesitant about it because one, he was overdrafted by Washington. And at
where
the time,
you,
I was
did you have him? Where'd you have him? He went, I think, outside, 10, right?
Right outside the lotto.
Yeah, like, I had him right outside the lotto. Like I think he went like 8th. I don't remember. I'll look it up here in a second.
He went 9th,
by the way. Did he? Okay. Ninth. I was hesitant just because of like, I still had that taste of overdraft in my mouth. But then like having to step back and just like, you know, what are you getting? You're getting a guy who can stretch the floor some, who has played in a system that wasn't really conducive to him. And because like he's having to play with Bradley Beal, who might not be worth his contract.
Not anymore.
And I know he just signed it, but like I would hate to be the Wizards in like four years having to pay him damn near $50 million. But and then with Kyle Kuzma, who thinks he's a superstar now and the media is hyping up him up as one, and just like he just kind of got like lost in a lot of weird things with a bad team, you know. So like just kind of
less bad, they're like very average. They're a very average team.
Yeah. So like to kind of go back to like my draft evaluation of like he's athletic, but he lacks some functional athleticism just because like how you said, he's like 250. He's big. Like not only is he 6'8", 6'9", maybe even 6'10" now, he's just got a lot of muscle mass on him, you know? So like, yeah, he's going to have a harder time with that. So like, in my opinion, like some people had said, like he's a good 3-4. I'm like, no, he's more of a 4-3, where he's more of a 4 who in against certain guys he can play against as a 3. He's gonna be able to beat up guys down low.
That's his 100% his biggest strength is that like 10 to 15 range.
Yeah,
he's really really good with the ball in his hand.
Yeah, he's got a good mid range game, as I said earlier, which is so valuable in the playoffs. Like he can get his own shots. He can, you know, get by guys and get to the basket, which for being, you know, not the most laterally quick, it's valuable. Like originally, like when they made the deal, like I had said in the chat, like, I don't think he's worth like $5 million next year because people are like, are we going to be able to re-sign him? And then someone had said that he wanted like 15 to 17. And originally I was like, get the fuck out of here. But like, again, I had to go back from like just they overdrafted him and then, you know, some just funky things with that team. If the Lakers can put him in a good position, which now with how everything is, I think they can. You can rotate that 3-4 with LeBron, Vando, and Rui, and I don't know who else you want to throw in there.
I mean, they don't really do much. Wenyan's more of a 5.
Yeah, he's more of a. They use him more as a 5. So I mean, like, just he'll be able to get minutes there, you know. And then they can still go small, and then he can play the 4 and whatnot. I think he's probably going to be worth that asking price of 15 to 17 with how the NBA is. I'd give it to him because one, it's they have his bird rights. It's a value. It's a contract that you can use as salary ballast. He shot well from deep before. It wasn't the move that I was the happiest with, just because at the time, like I said, was more focused on other things. And also it was like, I want PJ, or I want to try, you know, like some nonsense of Cam Reddish, you know. But I'm happy with that deal looking back at it. You know, the three seconds, whatever, they went and got three more seconds by trading Thomas Bryant.
Man, again, what an insane deadline for second round picks. It was absolutely nuts.
Someone traded like 4 or 5 seconds for someone, and I was just like, what the fuck? I can't remember.
It happened four times. Second round picks. It happened four times.
It just happened so often. So like that was getting rid of Nunn, who was just garbage. Like, and honestly, a despicable human being as well. Like I was happy just because of that. But looking back at him and seeing how he's played solid. Yeah. You know, like
I really want to see if him and Vando,
as long as he's cool with like you're not going to be getting 30 plus minutes a game. You know, which if you play
split him with Vando.
Yeah, I mean, if you technically you could, you know, LeBron and Vando at the 3-4, you know, having LeBron play say 32 minutes and Vando less than 32 minutes, because how we said earlier, he might be best as like a 25 minute.
Yeah,
you could still get that. You could still probably get the 30 minutes. How you said it kind of like lost its sparkle or its shine. It did. Because everyone's obviously focused on the Utah package, but I'm happy. There's so much of this deadline. I mean, and he was a bit pre-deadline, obviously, but like you added Rui and Mo Bamba. Just those two deals alone make me pretty happy. And then all the other things that they did make me just absolutely ecstatic.
Mm-hmm. I'm
excited.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I'll play Warriors tomorrow.
Was any final things, Raj?
I think that's pretty much it. I'm happy to come on in like a happy mode for once. I think the last few have been after like
the Russell, you were on the post Russell Westbrook trade podcast. Remember that? Right after we traded for Russ.
Oh man.
Yeah, I remember that. And then on the like pitching the Miles Turner Buddy Hield deal, I think a little while ago, which I still stand by. I think that would have been a fine one for where we were at the time, but I didn't think this would be available. I didn't think these three guys you could get for one protected first round pick. That's not the market I saw. But I think I just value players differently. I would have probably gave a first for Vanderbilt in like a vacuum, right? So
Tony Jones thought they were going to be able to.
Made sense. I mean, like, it was supposed to be a seller's market, however that term is, where there's like way more buyers than there are sellers. So I figured that Danny Ainge, who just got 3 million first round picks for Rudy Gobert, would be able to kind of flip, I guess, these guys for one. But thank God.
It was also the Timberwolves who traded essentially 5 first round picks, if you include Walker Kessler, and Vanderbilt and Beasley.
O'Connell went from being like looked at as a basketball savant with Denver to then going to Minnesota and just fucking that franchise. Poor Ant Edwards. That's who we should go after next. I'm just saying.
Yeah, give me Ant Edwards. That's my guy.
But they call that that new owner syndrome, though, right? New owner syndrome, where like a new owner comes in and they just want to make a splash. So
Didn't that happen before the sell?
I think it was right after. So then, like the A-Rod and all those groups, they went and traded everything and what was not tied down.
Of all the players, Rudy Gobert.
I feel for
that. At least if you overpay for Bradley Beal, you can, or someone like that, at least you can say, all right, it's Bradley Beal. I get it a little bit. This is Rudy Gobert.
I
and then Mike Conley's been terrible for him. but
yeah. This might be a topic for another podcaster afterwards. But I'll leave this, leave on this note of when was the last time you had like a great offensive big that you wanted to pair with a great defensive big? And then when was the last time that turned out good?
I mean, I know a lot of times people wanted like Powell paired up with someone.
Yeah.
Like that, you know what
but,
I mean?
But I mean, like he had Bynum, you know, for, you know, while Bynum was healthy, you know, mm-hmm. but like how many times did New Orleans try that shit with AD?
Yeah. I mean, look at Towns and Gobert.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah.
Like they try to do that. And every time it's like, no, just get him to defend the basket good enough. I don't understand how Karl Anthony Towns is so bad on defense when he was so good on defense.
He was literally the opposite player in Kentucky.
It makes no sense. So
the only pairing I can see that could legitimately work like that would be like Anthony Davis and Nikola Jokic. That's like the only one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that's like two of the seven best players in the league.
Yeah, exactly. So all right. I don't wanna keep rambling, so I'm gonna go ahead and end it right there. Real quick, Raj, thank you as always for joining us. We love to poke fun at you, but now we always do it out of love.
This time it was happening on the timeline, Raj, while we were recording.
I cannot wait to look at that in just a little bit. But yeah, no, thanks for joining us. Make sure to it's at All Access Lakers, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm. On Playback, where you know we stream every game. I had a film breakdown of Malik Beasley yesterday. I talked to Vanderbilt's trainer a couple of days ago. Those are both also on YouTube. So, yeah, this was fun though. I'm always like coming back here. And again, my views are not the same that are expressed by Nas or Clayton.
Or Clayton. Yes.
Yeah. So their views are their own. My views are my own, and whatever I say. So.
I am a despicable person, and Raj is the best of us.
You're not a bottom five or top five worst though.
Yeah,
that goes to our buddy Nas.
That goes to Nas. No, Raj is literally like a top three Lakers account. So
wow, underselling him that much?
Huh? All right,
underselling him that much.
I mean, I gotta have Pete on there when Pete's on, and then
Ben.
And Ben.
Ben's a great one. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. That's the three.
Exactly. That was the three. So, yeah.
All right.
We'll end there. Raj, again, thank you so much, my friend, for joining. And then Merge, I guess, thank you for joining and running this time.
Yeah.
Let's see if Merge gets this posted quickly.
I'll try my best.
Oh, man.
All right. So that'll wrap us up. You can find Raj on Twitter at Raj. How do you say your last name? I don't want to
Chipalu. Raj Chipalu. Yeah.
Wonderful. And then Merge at Merge 1998. And then myself at Lakers 1949. So thank you all once again for listening. Hope it was a lot more entertaining than some of our annoyance pods. So thank you all. Have a great one. And go Lakers.